is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. Rainy day here in Nashville. By the way, go to thegamenashville.com. We'll bring a little sunshine in your life. You have a chance to enter your loved one, Luxenhaus Day Spa in Franklin, a Valentine's Couples Retreat Package. It's worth $650. You and your special someone could receive a Swedish massage plus a facial and a pedicure. The Couples Retreat includes two 50-minute Swedish massages, two classic European facials, and two pedicures. So remember, go to thegamenashville.com and enter to win. I've never had a pedicure.
I haven't either.
Never had a manicure.
I haven't either.
I've had a lot of massages.
I'm a fan of the massage.
Me too.
Especially after, you know, just my back. My back gets to a point where I need one.
I always think maybe it would be embarrassing. I don't think I have ugly toes or toenails.
Yeah.
But I always think of the movie Dumb and Dumber. Like if I got a pedicure. Like would that, is that what they would be thinking? Like,
probably.
Oh my gosh, look at this. All right, let's start off the hour. I can't think of a better way to start it off than bringing in Nashville legend, now Super Bowl champion, Pat Sperduto.
Oh, God bless.
Is on the line with us.
Nashville legend.
Stop yeah. Hey, the legend grows now that you're a Super Bowl champ. Are you kidding?
Oh, okay.
I'm really happy for you because you and your family got to take this in down in Miami at Super Bowl 54 on Sunday. What was that like?
It was such a great experience. I mean, you know, you get there and you don't, all the things you can complain about, your room's too small. You can complain about, you know, how the traffic is everywhere, but it was so much fun. It was just so much fun seeing the enjoyment from my family first and foremost. And then the people that I know had been with the organization for so many years and we're all waiting for the opportunity, and then finally you get the opportunity to go to the Super Bowl. And then, like I've said, I said to so many people when they congratulated us for getting there, you just still want to get that win because I've been on both sides, and it's gut-wrenching on the other side, and I feel for all those guys because I know a lot of people in that organization, and I do feel sorry for them, but I feel happier for the people that deserve it in our organization, starting with, obviously, our owner, the Hunt family. You know, they've waited such a long time, and in honor of their dad to be in it and get the opportunity, I'm happy for them. But, of course, Coach Reed. Coach Reed's been such a great friend and such a great person in the organization. And the best story, the greatest story I can tell you is it was the day before the game, and we went out to the walkthrough, and they were doing a team photo. And so they set up these stands in the corner, and all the seats were, you know, were assigned for the players and the staff. And so they're all over there getting into the stands, getting into their chairs, and they're sitting down. Everybody's sitting down, and Coach Reed was in the middle of the field talking to one of our PR guys and a couple other people. And so he gets ready to walk over to the photo, to his seat in the front. And he walks over, and all of a sudden, all the players and staff stand up and just start clapping. And it was, it was so cool just to see how much these players and staff love this guy. It was a great feeling. I just stood there. It was so surreal watching them clap and cheer, and it was awesome. It really was. That was kind of one of the moments that I said, you know what, we really have a chance to win this thing with the way these guys feel about that guy and how hard they'll fight for him. And it said it all right there.
Yeah, number 15 doesn't hurt either. I mean, having him is –
he's pretty good.
He's kind of good. I mean, I'm not a scout or anything, but, I mean, my eyes tell me he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's never say die. He's such a great leader. He's so composed. He has so much confidence in the people around him, and that's a trait for a quarterback that you got to believe that you can throw a ball up into an area and your guy will get it. And that says a lot about the teammate he is, that he believes in them as much as they believe in him. And you know, he's a great quarterback, obviously. He's a great leader. and I'm happy for him. But like I said, I'm happy for the people that have gone through so much and have finally got there and now have something to say. And the city's pretty crazy. Like, we're getting ready for this parade tomorrow, and they're predicting snowstorms. And
oh no,
people have said it's still not going to stop them. So it'll be interesting. It'll be definitely an interesting situation, needless to say.
Pat Spirito on the line with us. In fact, you flew back with the team from Miami to Kansas City. What was the mood like? Just, you know, after winning the Super Bowl, what's it like? Being around.
Part of it was like, I think a lot of guys were just kind of finally decompressed on the plane. Like we had a really good time back at the hotel. They had a great concert and party for everybody. And you just saw the faces of the people. It's great to just be like a fly on the wall and staring at everybody. And you see the faces and you see guys that, you know, office people. We took everybody, and it's a credit to the Hunt family. They brought everybody from people who made, you know, worked in our cafeteria to people who, you know, changed the garbage can liners. It didn't matter. We brought everybody and to see the interaction between, you know, players and staff. And it was awesome. You stood back and you just watched. That was the best. And then my family, watching them have fun and talking to everybody and just, it's a great feeling when you see the elation on people's faces and first time meeting each other. And so it was awesome. It was, like I said, there's just one story after another of people just enjoying each other and letting them know how much they appreciated their hard work. So a credit to the Hunt family for their reaching out to everybody in the organization. And, you know, when we got back yesterday, I walked into the security desk in the facility, and I'm like, man, he looks new. He goes, yeah, I'm a part-time security guy they just hired because everybody's at the game.
Yeah, somebody's still got to watch the place.
Yeah, they had a staff. They brought in a staff to watch the facility while we were all in Miami.
Did you do a graffiti angel on the field?
No.
Because I know you were down on the field, so you didn't partake in the...
No, I was on the field, and I was just more looking around. Like I said, I took it in. I watched more people. People watched the whole. I walked over to my family, gave them all, you know, a hug and a love to them, and then I walked back on the field, and I just literally stood there and watched people. And when people come up to me, I'd give them a big hug, and then I'd just go looking around to the next person to see how they were reacting. And, you know, we have so many characters, and as a credit to Andy, how he lets guys – he lets them play with their emotions, but he also understands how to keep them focused on what we're doing. And that's one thing he even says. Look, I'll get you guys focused. You guys be yourselves, and they were themselves, obviously.
You know what's interesting? You've been with the Chiefs now for a long time, so you've been through different coaches, through different general managers. Now that you've been with them for a good while, in fact, how long is it? It's been over a decade. How long?
This 11.
11 years, wow.
11 years.
So what – I want to just know, because you knew Andy Reid before he came on board. So you've been around Andy Reid for a long time. He's accomplished a lot in the regular season. He's had some really, really successful teams. But everybody knows kind of his history in the playoffs and his track record. And the last thing, like the last – thing Andy Reid, the last thing he needed to punch or the box that he needed to check off was getting this. He is 1-5 in championship games before he broke through and beat the Titans. So now he was 2-5. How much do you think – look, he hears all that stuff. You know this. I mean, you as a former coach, so you can tell me all you want. You don't read the stuff. You don't listen to stuff. Baloney. You do. He knew the narrative. How much do you think that weighed on him to try to – you know, punch that final ticket and get a Super Bowl?
Andy, he's a different cat, though. Andy's very – and I noticed this is the one thing that stood out to me, you know, on the field when it didn't matter what was going on during the game at 10-10 or, it, you know, we were down, you know, 21-10. It didn't matter. They stayed the course. Everybody – you watch the coaches, and there was never a panic. It was interesting. There was even – you know, when Patrick threw that one ball behind Tyreek, you know, and they get the interception and everybody, you know, I think the crowd was more like, oh my gosh, this could be it. And you, I watched the sideline and those guys just stayed the course, the defensive linemen getting up, they were getting ready to get back out there. We'll get it back. You know, like there was no issues. Like it was no do this, do that. There's such a good group of leaders too. And guys like Tyrann Mathieu, I really didn't know enough of the type of leader that guy is. He's incredible. He really is a great leader. And you watch the way he acted. And then you watch the way, you know, guys like Chris Jones acted. And you watch the way the guys just kept stepping up as leaders and said, hey, at no point in time was there a panic. And the coaches were just as remarkable in how they stayed the course. It's the hardest thing with coaching and having gone through it as a coach. So many times you get out of character where you now hit the, you know, a little bit of a panic button, and your players take that lead always. If you start complaining about the officials, they start complaining about the officials. If you mope around, they mope around. If you yell and scream, they want to yell and scream. So the calm and poise of the staff was remarkable. It really was. It was just so smooth. And, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to get the ball back, then we'll go down and score. And then we'll turn around and we'll stop them again, and we'll get the ball back, and we'll score again. And that was the mindset at the whole game. It wasn't just the last 8 minutes. It was the whole entire game. They said, hey, we'll get our stop, and then we'll get our scores. And the explosion at the end said a lot about how, hey, look, if we just keep, you know, chopping wood or, you know, stay in the course, it's going to turn. And it luckily turned late in the game for us, you know.
Pat Sperduto is with us, Chiefs, Scouts, and Nashville legend. Look, I gotta pile on too because you are. So I want to go back to something with quarterbacks and Patrick Mahomes. And when you go through an evaluation process, I mean, we know all the things that he can do, the leadership qualities and the rocket arm and the footwork and things like that. But when you're looking at a quarterback in college, what is it that you're looking for that says, okay, they're a great college quarterback, but they can also do this in the NFL?
Well, you know, you start obviously with the physical tools always, and he had the physical tools. He was a, you know, the baseball draft pick, and you know, his arm strength was never a question, and the off-platform throws that he makes are pretty impressive, where his feet aren't set, and he's not like he's a quarterback coach's nightmare that wants to teach mechanics, because his mechanics aren't always ideal. But that's part of what makes him different, where he can make an off-platform throw, or he can make a throw running right and throwing left, or, you know, and then he tries those crazy no-look and, you know, stuff like that. It's pretty funny to watch that part. But really, some of the things that resonated with that guy, and really the credit goes to our area scout down there is Willie Davis. He does Texas, and Brett Veach, our GM currently at the time, he was, you know, I think our director of player personnel. He had his title, you know, but he went in there and he fell in love with Patrick day one. And it was amazing how much he kept, you know, tooting the horn for the kid and said, hey, look, this is a different dude. And he's got stuff that, you know, we've never seen. And, you know, when we put on the film and we see some of the things that he did physically, it was pretty impressive. Then you add the fact that he might be one of the toughest guys on the team. And I'm not talking about tough going into a bar and beating people up. I'm talking about tough that he can get hit, get back up, no phase, you know, just, all right, let's go. Come on. No big deal. Never yells at anybody. That's not his leadership style. It's, hey, we, and it says it all. It's never about him. It's about us, and that leadership is a testament. I read a story about him playing against Missouri. I think it was Missouri. It was Kansas or Missouri. I can't remember. And they were down by like 20 at the half, and he gets banged up pretty good. And, you know, you figure, hey, they're down by a ton of points. He's, you know, he should just shut it down. There's no chance he's coming back in this game. And sure enough, at halftime, he comes running back out of the tunnel, gets right back on the field, and it didn't matter if it was they were up 20-0 or down 20-0, he was going to play. And that, you know, when he hurt his knee, he wanted to keep playing. And that's that toughness, and it makes guys respect him even more, even though he's in that prime highlight position. it says a lot about him as a leader that they know he's willing to suffer as much as they're suffering.
What is it about Andy Reid that makes him so good with quarterbacks? I joke all the time that any quarterback that's maybe had a rough patch in their career needs to go to the Andy Reid quarterback rehabilitation program, because it seems like he knows how to work with QBs.
I think it's like goes back to what I said, the way he is calm and poised to him, and he's such a great teacher. I mean, his teaching style, like I could actually see him teaching like a history class in a high school, because that's the type of guy he is. He's going to make them understand, you know, here's what we're thinking. Here's how I envisioned it at first. Do you see it this way? Okay. If you don't see it this way, let's take a look and look at it at a different perspective. And one thing about Coach Reid, he is just a rare teacher, that he's going to captivate that person in that seat somehow, some way. And he makes them see it. He makes them he's willing to find their way of learning and adjust his style of teaching to their way of learning.
Mm. Have you slept much?
Yeah, I slept last night.
Okay.
I got back to the hotel, and we're getting ready. We're getting ready for our draft meeting, so we had to postpone them a few days.
It's like crazy.
Because of the game.
Just won the Super Bowl. They're doing draft meetings.
Never ends.
No, it never ends. So we got our draft meetings, and that goes up to the combine, and then we go to the combine, and then we have pro days. So it doesn't stop. We're trying to prepare and hopefully make this team a little bit better for next year and be able to compete again.
So David Baker did not knock on your hotel door?
No.
In Miami?
David Baker,
okay.
No.
Just wanted to make sure.
David Baker did not knock on my door. I like David. David's the biggest human being I've ever seen in my life.
He is a massive man.
I can only imagine. Can you imagine him trying to fit into a hat? Any hat.
I did think the Isaac Bruce story was pretty cool. Like that was pretty interesting.
I didn't even hear the Isaac Bruce story.
Oh, you didn't hear where he knocked on the door, and Isaac Bruce told his family, "Hey, they're knocking at the door, but just wait. I'm going to let them wait, like they've made me wait. I'm going to take control of this." And so he made David Baker keep knocking, and then he finally answered the door and told him that he wanted him to wait like he's been waiting.
That's awesome.
That was a pretty cool story.
Absolutely. That's an awesome story.
Hey, congrats. I'm glad you got to take it in with your family. That's awesome. And thanks for doing this, as always.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you guys, and you guys have done so much for me and for the city. And, you know, I love you guys. So anything you need, you always call me. Reach out.
Well, thanks, Pat.
We love you, too. And I'm sure at Christmas we'll be handing out a lot of 49ers Super Bowl champ shirts.
Oh!
What? What just happened? Was that on the air? Oh, man.
Stop it.
And with that.
Thank you, Pat.
Bye, guys. Thanks.
See you, Pat.
Wow. That was a pretty good line.
I mean, we could hand out some Titans AFC Championship shirts while we're at it. You want to do that too?
Well, maybe. Do they do that?
I mean,
I think
so.
Do they do championship shirts in advance?
Yeah, they had hats.
Yeah.
Hats. And I think the Chiefs had shirts. I don't know. I was down. I was in the bowels of Arrowhead Stadium.
And you were kind of busy. All right, we'll come back. More with Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. We are bobbing, weaving like you're on 24, 65, or 40, in and out of traffic. I mean, it has been a crazy show, without a doubt. We appreciate Pat Sperduto for kicking off this hour. We wanted to get a perspective on his experience. He's a Nashvillian. His family live here. He used to be the Nashville Cats coach, head coach, both stints. He has a lot of history in this market. He used to work for the Titans, yeah, before. Now he's been the last 11 years with the Chiefs, and you know what work he does on this show with us around the holidays, because you guys have been awesome in helping give and letting us pass out incredible things you bring to the radio station or to Corner Pub in the past. So we wanted to tell him congratulations on the air. But one of the other big news stories is Malcolm Turner is out. He has resigned as Vanderbilt's athletic director. We're going to have Jordan Rogers join us in about 10 minutes, and we're going to talk to him. But right now, Max Herz is in studio with us. And, of course, he does the play-by-play for the Vanderbilt women's basketball team. He does stuff on the baseball team. I mean, he went to Vanderbilt. He's a part of our station and understands the athletics department over there. You knew Malcolm Turner. Max, I'll ask you the same thing I asked Joe Rexroad earlier and that we've been talking about all morning. How surprised were you? We heard something was coming at the very beginning of the show, and we're like, what is happening? You know, is he going to unveil a new football stadium? Like, what do you mean something's brewing with Malcolm Turner? So how surprised were you?
Yeah, I guess half and half almost. I'm more disappointed than anything else.
Okay, why?
It was plan A for Vandy, and it didn't work. It took a year, and it didn't work, and now you got to go in a different direction. I talked when I was on this show every time I could about how I thought Malcolm Turner was the correct type of hire for Vanderbilt. I wanted, from the moment that the position became open, I wanted somebody from the sports business world at large. I wanted somebody with a fresh set of eyes, a fresh point of view, who was ready to take things in a different direction. And I think he got a chance to do that. But maybe overdid it, and I'm just extremely disappointed that plan A that I thought was a good plan didn't work. And again, with some of the news that had come out yesterday, started to see some things that were not pointing in the correct direction.
Yep.
And were pointing to some maybe immediate changes. So because of that, I wasn't surprised. But I mean, if you had told me a month ago today that this was going to happen on February the 4th, I would have been surprised.
You were much higher on Malcolm Turner than I was. And I don't disagree with what you just laid out about him. I was more, you know, hiding behind the scenes and just sending out press releases as a SEC athletics director in Nashville at Vanderbilt. To me, is just not the way to go about things. I did like his background. I think, as you mentioned, his business sense. He was a smart guy, maybe could get things changed. But I've also been much older than you, and I've been following Vanderbilt.
You've always been much older than me.
I have. You're right. That is
me too.
That has not changed. You're right. And I've seen this now for two decades plus, and the closest I've ever seen to like actually rocking the boat and actually getting real momentum and change and pushing some barriers to the side was James Franklin in 3 years, and he lasted 3 years, and then he punted. He said, "I got to move on. I can't do this." There were things that just frustrated the you-know-what out of him. And James Franklin is the only one that I can really think of that has come close. Tim Corbin just said, fine, I see your obstacles and I'll raise you. I'll just go do it myself. Fine, I don't need you. I'll just go do it myself. And so everything he's done is because of him, okay, because he's gone out there and raised the money and done the proper steps. It's not because he got much help. So why do you think, because it was obviously there were signs, there was a baseball banquet at the Omni Saturday night. He wasn't there. Malcolm Turner was not there. There was recognition of a 1993 basketball team that Willie Donick was a part of when he had hair that he was not at Memorial
Gym. Glad you included that last
Well,
part.
He did. He had hair in 1993. He was not there for that. So there were clear telltale signs that this thing was already over in his mind, that he had already moved on. But where do you think it really started getting sideways, where he was probably in a lot of private moments going, I think I've signed up for the wrong place?
I guess based on the timing that they were having major difficulty pushing out the facilities plan that was originally slated for December, then slated for January, and here we are in February. It didn't come out, and I imagine on either one side or both side, whichever side made this decision, and it was called a resignation. We don't know which side really made the decision. I think there was a realization on either side that this isn't going to happen, this plan isn't going to work, and then either one or both sides wanted out of it. So I really think that's what it was, and I think they kind of spent themselves out of it in a way, as many people have reported, and a lot of that I can confirm myself. The whole thing just got put in a really tough spot and was taken on a sharp left turn.
You obviously know Candace Story Lee. A lot of us watched her body of work as an athlete. She understands the school. She understands the market. She understands the athletic program. So what we know the challenges that face her, how do you think she's going to approach this as the first female AD of Vanderbilt?
I think she's the correct person for what is obviously a terrible situation, and she's going to be put in a tough spot. And it will be tough for her, I imagine, at least immediately, to put her personality on things, to really put things into action, which I think she, of course, should have an opportunity to do as someone who has been in Vanderbilt athletics basically as long as anyone, has had so many different roles since she played on the women's basketball team in the late 90s, early 2000s, working her way up to deputy AD, second in command, and now the athletic director. But I think it is a tough spot for her because obviously where they are right now, they needed to make a change. Money is supposedly an issue. And before anything can really come forward, they got to get back at least to 0-0, if you know what I mean.
All right. Well, we're going to put pause. We're going to hit pause, okay? We're going to come back with Jordan Rodgers, and then we'll pick things up with you after Jordan Rodgers because I know you've got more to weigh in on this topic.
Yeah, so, I want to hear from Jordan, too, by the way.
Well,
I think he is a really valuable voice in this conversation. I know there are some Vandy fans who are not crazy about him for some things he said, but I find that when he speaks like that, I tend to agree with him 99.9% of the time.
Sometimes the truth hurts. I think Jordan's been pretty honest, sometimes brutally honest, about things over on West End. We will come back with Jordan Rodgers on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe. Willie D is up in Winnipeg. Tonight it's the Predators and the Jets. 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6. Everything heard right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. When this story broke at the beginning of our show, there's somebody we had in mind we definitely wanted to talk to. That's former Vanderbilt quarterback. He does great work on television, SEC Network. He does it all. Jordan Rodgers, and he's been very honest. And as I said on the show, sometimes brutally honest, and a lot of people don't like to hear that. Well, sometimes you have to say tough. If you don't like the truth, sometimes the truth hurts. And Jordan, I have to believe that I don't know what you thought when you first saw this, but what was your initial reaction?
What's going on, guys? You know, I actually just finished a workout in 2020 trying to get back in shape. So I saw it come across my phone. I got texted by a few different people. I think initially just extremely disappointed, and I think there's a big lack of hope, I think, when I saw that announcement. Now, on one hand, I love Candace Lee. I think this is an incredible opportunity for Candace. I think she's been primed and ready for this position for a while now. I've had nothing but great experiences, and I have nothing but a lot of confidence in Candace Lee. But the problem is, and here's where I just find there's not a lot of hope. The problem is we went out and got somebody that in real-world experiences away from sports in the manner that Vanderbilt deals with it, away from a lot of the different problems that come with college sports, a guy that had real-world success at building something and scaling something, was not able to come in and convince the financial arm, the institution of Vanderbilt, that we need to do things differently. And that's where I don't have hope. It's not that I don't believe Candace can be successful. I think Candace has every opportunity. She has everything in herself, her character, her will, her determination, her hard work. The problem is Vanderbilt. And that's always been the problem. The problem is there is a stigma and a stereotype of what spending money looks like. And there's a complacency when it comes to sports. And there will and always has been a problem with the academic side of Vanderbilt not wanting to be overshadowed by sports. And the thought that if we spend money, if we invest money in sports, we're less of an academic institution. I think you look at many programs across this country where that is just simply not true. Both can coexist. Vanderbilt can be unbelievably academic, and they can be unbelievable at sports if they choose to invest. So here's where I'm at now. I'm a little angry, to be honest. I'm disappointed. I would like to take this financial arm or group that is and continues to push back against spending on sports. And I want to take a little road trip with them, guys. I want to take them 322 miles north. 3 hours and 22 minutes, about 215 miles north. Let's go to Kentucky. Because the biggest pushback I always get when I talk about Vanderbilt spending is, oh, well, you know, we're never going to be Alabama. You know, we can't have those kind of facilities and compete with them. Okay, great. But you know what? In football and in a lot of other sports, we're going to compete head-to-head with Kentucky when it comes to recruiting. And I have a unique situation where I get to be at every SEC school, every year, multiple times, two, three, four times. They get to walk through every facility. And the difference between Vanderbilt and every facility, from 13 to 1, because we're 14 right now, from 13 to 1, every facility is light years ahead of Vanderbilt. So I would like this financial institution that was pushing back against Malcolm Turner, that will continue to push back against Candace Lee as much as she will fight for this program to expand and take the next step. I want to take them on a road trip to show them what other schools do, because I think there's a very twisted concept of what it looks like to invest into a sports program and facilities in the SEC. And right now we're the only ones that don't get it. And that's the frustrating part.
Okay, that is very interesting. So with that being said, let me ask you this. Here, the Titans ownership group, after Bud Adams passed away, was kind of a rudderless ship. You had the family. Nobody knew them. They were just names. Nobody ever saw them. There was nothing going on. And the league stepped in and said, hey, we need somebody to take charge here. We need somebody to act like they're in control. Somebody to stand up and say, we're going to do something and run this thing, or we're going to step in and fix this for you. And that's where Amy Adams Strunk stood up, and she did that, and things have been completely different since then. So with that being said, can Greg Sankey and the SEC do anything, Jordan, to kind of shake the Vanderbilt tree over there and say, hey, you're in the SEC. We just doled out $650 million. Everybody got $46 million. Like, we need you to keep up with the times. We need you to make sure you're representing the conference to the level that we think you should for athletics. Do they have the power to do that?
You know, I would love to see that. Honestly, I think that's what needs to happen. Now, I don't know what kind of power, what kind of threat, what kind of legality is behind that, but absolutely, I think Greg Sankey needs to say, hey, look around. We're handing out $46 million. The conference is at its strongest. It's only going to continue to get stronger, but there's one weak link. There really is. I mean, that's the truth. There's one weak link that continues to fall behind the standard. And anytime you look at the SEC, anytime Greg Sankey opens his mouth about the SEC, there's a standard. They do things different in this conference. Everybody does things different except for one program right now. And so, look, I don't know what exactly went on behind closed doors with Malcolm Turner. I had an opportunity to sit down with him his first week on the job, and I simply just said, hey, look, I have a unique experience having been a player during the biggest transition of Vanderbilt, especially the football program, that has ever happened. I have a unique position now where I get to meet with and see every AD, every coach, every single year, and now I get to be on this side of the media and look at Vanderbilt through a different lens. I said, look, I'd love to be a resource. I'm not going to stick my nose in here. I'm not going to stick a foot in the door. I'd love to be a resource. Just if you ever need to bounce ideas off me, understand a little bit more about what other schools are doing, what goes on in this conference, I'd love to be that resource. I don't think I was ever used as that, and that's okay. I don't need to be. But someone in that facility needs to look at things different, and it might take Greg Sankey going, hey, you got to do something, because that money – other schools do more with that money and you guys don't. So I would love to see that, because Vanderbilt is falling way behind the standard that the SEC portrays on a weekly basis at every other school.
I mean, can he look at them, Jordan, and say, what's our motto? You know, what is the SEC motto?
Just
means
more.
Just means more. So you can look at them and say, does it just mean more to you? We just gave you a $46 million check.
Well, and you know what I was just thinking, too? Here's where it also gets a little scary for Vanderbilt, I think. The college football landscape, the college landscape of amateur athleticism is changing very rapidly. If we're falling this far behind, when seemingly there's a level playing field to some degree, right? I mean, you, especially in the SEC, you get X amount of money. Yeah, we're not making as much money as other programs, but you right now just have to recruit. Other schools, you can't technically pay players. You can't provide different opportunities. Look, a player shows up. They like the coaches. They like the city. Wowed by the facilities. They have an opportunity to say, I want to come play football here. Well, in a few years, that's going to be different. There's going to be more opportunities. There's going to be boosters. There's going to be more money. There's going to be more schools that have the ability to attract recruits in a different manner, not just with the brick and mortar. And that is going to be a problem. If Vanderbilt is falling this far behind, when all you got to do is commit money like other schools are doing, well, just wait until things really change. And then where's that going to put us? So that's where I think this is a pivotal time for Vanderbilt, because the landscape of college football, especially the landscape of amateurism, is changing very rapidly. And if we're this far behind, where seemingly we have as good of a chance as anybody to recruit and to build something, I think it's going to get really, really different really soon.
We're talking to Jordan Rogers from the SEC Network. And Jordan, this could be a weird question, but follow me on this. I look back at when you were a player and the success that you all had with James Franklin as the head coach, that three-year stretch of going to bowl games, of winning bowl games, and just how much success the football team had. In some ways, based upon what we've talked about with how Vanderbilt thinks and with money towards athletics and all of that, was that some, did it hurt in some ways? Because then they look at it as, well, hey, I mean, this is what we've been doing, and James Franklin had success. Why can't we continue to do this?
Totally. Yeah, I think it did. And really, if you look back at the why, yeah, we had some good players, for sure. They were all recruited, by Bobby Johnson, not by facilities, not by anything. You know, we were all overlooked in one way or another. The biggest difference was James Franklin. And the biggest difference was he came in and he demanded that things were done differently. And he had a leverage and he had power because of little success that we had, because of the charisma, the authority, the person that he was able to demand more. We haven't had that. We haven't had that type of person that says, no, I get how you've done it. Here's how we're going to do it. And you're not going to do it that way, I'm going to leave. And he did leave. And he left because it was a constant battle. So, yeah, I think in a way that hurts, that there was some success where, you know, we did things a little differently. You know, in 2012, once my senior year came around, we built an indoor facility after that year. So we started to do things a little differently. But there's still pushback, and James Franklin left because he was tired of the pushback, and he was tired of fighting for things that every other school was able to do. So again, I go back to that. Yes, I think there's a great complacency around Vanderbilt, but again, I was just there in Nashville. You know, I still have a business in Nashville, still have a home there, so I'm there frequently. I was just driving around campus, and I'm like, every building is getting fixed right now. I mean, there is hundreds of millions of construction going on that campus, which is great. That campus needed it. The dorms needed rebuilding. Some of the academic buildings needed rebuilding. But the only place that things not happening is over in the athletics. Basketball, football, baseball, they're all in the same building. Where's the money into that? So I just think there's a great imbalance, and I think there's a great complacency in just being okay. And at some point, that's not going to match the SEC. And at some point, Vanderbilt's going to be the one that's going to be the odd man out.
That's the thing that I will never understand, because, you know, I grew up in this town. I was here before the Titans, before the Preds. And so I spent a lot of my days on that campus going to football games, basketball games, baseball games. And, you know, that stadium's older than I am, Jordan. I mean, well, it's older than both of us. I mean, it hasn't had any work done to it. And I can't wrap my head around why they think that's okay, considering the millions of dollars that go into the SEC, the fact that there is a damn network that you work for that covers the conference, and you guys come and you do games at Vanderbilt Stadium, and quite frankly, it's a dump.
Yeah, and you know what's even worse? I just, again, to illustrate that Vanderbilt does things differently, every year we do 2 hours of spring game coverage for every school. And really, the spring games, it's a marketing opportunity, right? We run some fun stories on players. We get on campus, you know, the week of, and we film facilities, and we talk. It's pretty much a marketing opportunity for every school, which is great. Vanderbilt's the only school that refuses to do an actual game, so they're the only school in the SEC that only gets an hour of coverage, because we can't cover a practice for 2 hours. And I always get, you know, people always like to tweet at me and go, oh, well, you know, the SEC doesn't like Vanderbilt. You only give us an hour. No. If you guys would choose to have a game, we'd do an hour of fun content. We'd do an hour of the shell of a quote-unquote game, and Vanderbilt would have 2 hours of marketing opportunity just like every other school, but they choose to do things differently, and it hurts the program. But again, you don't need to look at the Texas A&Ms. You don't need to look at the Alabamas, because they're spending $300, $400, $500 million every year, and it seems to not matter. That's okay. But I'm not asking for that. But go look at Missouri, because Missouri just redid their entire football facility for just over $100 million. Which in the grand scheme of things, I know it sounds crazy, and I know what I'm going to say sounds crazy. That's nothing in the grand scheme of what colleges spend on facilities, and Missouri's facilities are unbelievable. Now, would anybody choose to live in Como over Nashville? Probably not. You know, does Missouri have a ton more success and tradition? Not necessarily, and not right now especially. But why are kids going to choose that over Vandy if you're a football player? Well, because you walk in those facilities and it's like, whoa, I get to spend my next 4 or 5 years, 99% of my daily life in this building. That's pretty cool. I want to come here. So again, it's just, it doesn't take a lot, but it just takes keeping up with the standard that every other school is doing, or even just that the schools from 10 to 13 in the SEC and ranking from 1 to 14 in the most successful, what those schools are doing, and we just don't.
Just for the record, Dudley Phil's older than all of us, okay?
Yeah.
You can include me in that.
That's true. That's true.
Okay, it's not just the two of you, all right?
It had a renovation in, what, 82? If
you want to say renovations, but, you know, the field is actually older than all of us.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair.
But again, guys, I come back to the fact that I'm not pounding the table for us just to do things for football, because I was an athlete there, and every athlete lives in the same building. All the, you know, the soccer locker rooms, you know, every other sport is housed in that McGugan building. It's like, let's do something there, because, yeah, it'll benefit football, but it's going to benefit every other athlete as well. Our tutoring, our study halls, the weight rooms, the Olympic weight rooms for all the other sports, the football, everything's there. So, you know, I'm not asking to pound the table and let's invest in football. Let's invest in everybody, because right now, outside of Corbin and baseball, there's not much to hang your hat on right now when it comes to athletics.
In fairness, you've told us that for years, so that is not a new message.
Yeah,
so you have
totally, definitely
said that for many, many years. Jordan, thanks for doing this on short notice. It kind of took us back as we started the show today, but thanks for doing this. Good to hear from you as always.
Same, guys. I'm going to go take a shower now.
Thanks, Jordan.
See you, fellas.
All right, that is Jordan Rogers, SEC Network, former Vanderbilt quarterback. Some pretty strong words, as always, when talking about Vanderbilt athletics and facilities and money. So we'll bring Max Herz back into the conversation. He just heard that interview with Jordan Rogers. We'll do that to close out the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Max Herz back here on the show with us. He's in the studio. Max, you heard what Jordan Rogers had to say to us. What stood out to you?
Not a lot from him that I hadn't heard him say before,
yep,
which is good. I mean, he has stuck with his guns throughout all of this. I, like him, have a ton of respect for Candace Lee, and I think she is the correct person to fix the situation that they're in. And I agree with him, two things. I agree with him about the spring game, and that I think that is more of a football staff decision than an administration decision. But I agree they should take advantage of that opportunity, and he describes it perfectly well, as he should, being someone who's on the inside of it, that it's 2 hours of free advertising for your program, for recruits, for fans of other teams to take in, and it just replays from March through July.
Yes.
So that's something that you want to literally put on tape if you can. So I agree with him on that. I also agree that the McGugan Center is kind of the epicenter of everything. And I think in the facilities plan that we now may never see in the form that Malcolm Turner wanted to come out in, that was going to be the focus with football facilities.
He has been very consistent on that message.
Yes.
And he knows. He lived it. He was there every day for years. And he lives it now, as he said, through the SEC network, his job, because he gets to go around to these SEC campuses and tour the facilities, and he knows them inside and out, and he understands, and he's painting the picture, how incredibly far behind Vanderbilt is.
Yeah, they are behind in everything other than baseball, and the baseball facilities are incredible, and every day from September, October through the next couple weeks when they all head back down to spring training, there are anywhere from 20 to 40 pro and major league baseball players in that building every day, and they are surrounded by not that in every other sport. So it's an interesting contrast.
What did you make of what I said to him about the SEC network or the SEC and Greg Sankey maybe getting involved? Do you know if they have any ability or power to do that, to basically say, hey, we need you to get with the times. We need you to represent the conference like everybody else. We just, yet again doled out and cut you a humongous check, and we need you to spend it on athletics. We need you to represent the SEC like everybody else is.
They have the power to say whatever they want. I don't know if they have the power to force anybody's hand, but I think the extremely well-established relationship between not just Greg Sankey, but everybody at the SEC office and the league's administration with Candace Lee will be able to help make some of that happen, because I think she will be open to hear outside voices, because she is the inside voice. She is the internal voice, and I've seen so many recent Vanderbilt student-athletes tweeting how much they appreciate her, and you guys said something along those lines earlier on, and I think she understands that she has tapped into both the internal opinion and the external opinion. But I don't want people to think that Vanderbilt isn't spending any of that money. I've worked with the production team for the SEC Network events at Vanderbilt. They totally refurbished their production room this summer, and that is something that brings Vanderbilt lots of money. Many, many times there is a game hosted on campus. So I don't want people to think that money is going nowhere. The money that comes from the network, at least part of it, is being spent on Vanderbilt's SEC Network operations, which every school runs, and Vanderbilt, who was behind, is now back where they need to be and generating revenue through that.
Let's get Nate in here real quick. Nate, what's up?
Hey, guys. Is there a minimum that the colleges have to spend on athletics through the money that they get from the SEC, or can they just spend it on the school and the athletes however they want to?
I don't know the answer to that. Because, I mean, that's basically what we're talking about.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to speculate on that either.
I feel like if they aren't spending it how they're really supposed to, they should be fined or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to Jordan Rogers' point, I mean, he drives through campus and sees new buildings going up, and then you look at athletics, and they're not really doing much with them. I mean, I know they've done a few things here and there with the
Magoo
Center.
But as he said, the dorms desperately.
Sure.
They needed to do that project, but for the sake of a show like this, we're talking about sports.
I've made the joke before of, that Vanderbilt would rather build a new science building than, fix the stadium. And I'm joking, but I'm also kind of telling the truth. So, I mean, they just haven't put the money into the athletic facilities that they should, in my opinion.
Thank you, Nate, for the call. So how much – they have a new chancellor, correct?
Soon to be.
Do we know anything about the new chancellor?
Yes. So this is Daniel Diermeier, who is coming from the University of Chicago, was previously the dean of the business school at Northwestern. His background is in crisis management, and his highest profile crisis management case was for a small firm called British Petroleum, who was in a little bit of trouble.
A small company. Yep.
Little firm. But he is taking over, I believe, on July 1st is when he starts, Daniel Diermeier. And Susan Wente, who was the provost, has been the interim chancellor, and she seemed to be a big fan of the athletic department. She was a season ticket holder for all sports, and it seemed like if she had the ability to get some things done, they probably would have been able to work together better. And the interesting thing to me about all this, and this isn't based off of anything I've heard, Diermeier's job at the University of Chicago, where he is coming from, finished up this week. He was succeeded on February the 1st. So now he has his full attention turned to Vanderbilt, and he's someone who all signs point to from me not being a friendly proponent for Vanderbilt athletics, as Nick Zeppos ended up becoming at the end of his tenure, and Susan Wente had been as the interim.
Well, they certainly were not going to get the support like Chancellor Guy gave Vanderbilt, because he was all about the athletics. As you said, Zeppos kind of came around.
And Zeppos was who hired Malcolm Turner, and I think it did debilitate what Turner did, that he lost his partner unexpectedly pretty quickly on the university side.
Well, he named him the AD. He had been there, right? Hadn't David Williams been there? Or you said Malcolm Turner, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But David Williams didn't have the title athletic director. Was that Zeppos that gave him that, or was that Guy?
No, that was long before. That was when Guy was there. But
okay, that's what I thought.
Zeppos was the one who was initially very attracted to Malcolm Turner through the search firm.
Gotcha.
So the signs are pointing that the new chancellor really doesn't doesn't have much to do with athletics.
That's what it seems. He comes from the University of Chicago, which is, I believe, D3. I mean, he did not see a single game of anything when he was there. And he has the background in crisis management. His other big ploy there was breaking up a graduate student unionization attempt, which, interestingly enough, there is a similar unionization attempt going on at Vanderbilt right now, grad students who are trying to get paid for their graduate work. And I just thought it was interesting timing. But he seems to be anti-spending. And on the topic of crisis management, great. I mean, you could say that there's a crisis right now, in a way. So,
Max, we'll check back in with you in the final hour. When we come back, we'll start the fourth hour heading up to Winnipeg. That's the opponent for the Predators tonight, Jets and Preds. 7 o'clock puck drop, pregame at 6. We'll learn a little bit more about the opponent next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.